Hello and welcome to Thy Queendom Come. I am your host, Queen Lo, and I just got back home from my last sunset beach walk of my 20s. Your girl is turning fucking 30. And 3 years ago tonight, on the eve of my 27th birthday, I was putting the final touches on what would be the first episode of Thy Queendom Come, and I was preparing to launch it and thinking back on how vulnerable and exposing that felt. And here I am 3 years later doing the very same thing, because in honor of my birthday and of 3 years of the queendom, I am going to wind the clock back and fill in some holes on my journey here. So buckle up and enjoy. I'm gonna go pop a bottle of champagne, and here is to all of the exploration, more discovery, and all of the kinky, amazing fucking things in my next decade of life.
Dreams can come from nightmares too. The queendom will take over you. Dreams can come from nightmares too. The queendom will take over you.
What's up, sluts? So this morning I did a thing. I took a pregnancy test. And thank fuck I tested negative. Holy shit, am I right? But I also, aside from that, I also put down the deposit for, signed a lease for, secured the house of my literal fucking dreams in the place of my dreams with the partner of my dreams. It was a beautiful fucking morning. Obviously, I'm not buying the house. I am nowhere near that committed yet, or bankrolled enough yet. But for me, this is a fucking big deal. Not only signing a year, potentially year and a half lease, but also doing it in the place of my literal dreams, in a community and space that I dreamed about, have dreamed about. And it's extra special because as this episode is being released today, March 7th, it is my fucking 30th birthday, and it is fucking snaps. First of all, I cannot wait to hear, holy shit, you're in your 30s? For the next decade. And also, it is the 3-year anniversary of Thy Queendom Come. I launched this podcast 3 years ago on my 27th birthday. And sitting here today, it all makes so much sense, but it's also a bit unbelievable. And I look back and I look at that 27-year-old girl who started this thing truly on blind faith and intuition. And I think, what the fuck were you thinking? Like, what were you planning? What was gonna happen? Like, what? And I don't know. I had no idea what this was going to become, who I was going to become. I just started exploring, and I was invested in that and in the community that's created when I share. And ultimately what led me into the podcast of wanting to explore my own sexuality and talk about it and experience the different sex scenes in an attempt to understand myself, having the podcast really only expanded that, only like thrusted that forward. And in the process, I just followed my own butterflies. Like, I followed my butterflies and wherever they took me, even if they took me into dark, sketchy spaces. And now, as I sit here 3 years later, as a professional dominatrix who loves. I love what I do, and I see the value in it, and I'm proud of myself and the community that I exist in. And having had no idea that this is where I was gonna end up, but truly just following myself and not even all the pretty things, like following the things that I desired and what I wanted, and also diving into like the shadow parts of me and the seedier parts of myself, coming face to face with those things and truly diving into them is what led me here to be able to provide value in the way that I do and receive it back. And it's amazing. It's beyond my wildest fucking dreams. However, as I sit here now as a dominatrix, and when I tell people about what I do, the response is usually people are like, they think it's pretty cool. They're like, hell yeah, I can see that. However, a common response that I get is, oh, but you're not fucking your clients. You're not, you know, you're not making out with them. There's no pussy play. You're not like having sex with them or sucking them off, or, you know, even the videos that I send in my online sessions. If you've heard a lot of the episodes, you'll know that I not only have boundaries in my in-person sessions where there is no sex, there is no pussy play, but then in my online sessions, sometimes I do them at the beach or with other people around. And so a lot of people's response is, you know, oh, but you're not doing anything. Like, you're not doing anything sexual. And it's like, for some reason, because I'm not quote unquote disclosing that I'm doing anything sexual or that would go past what they deem as appropriate, it's somehow okay, or it's better. It's somehow better than if I said I was fucking for money or I was sending explicit videos. All of a sudden, then that's not accepted. And I've even noticed this type of prejudice against each other within the community, within the sex work community. You know, there are girls online, they're like, oh, I'm just online, I don't fuck my clients. Then there's, oh, you're just a strip, you're, oh, she's a porn star, she shows everything, she doesn't show anything, she doesn't fuck, she does fuck. I mean, it's like the whole world is out to get us, and we're also out to get each other in a way. And I think it's because of the stigma and the shame and the shit that the world puts on us, which I have experienced. And we are all sex workers, whether we're selling feet pictures or putting men on their knees. It's sex work. And I think it also has a place. I think it has an important place in this world. And I think it's fucking powerful. And that's why it's in the shadows. And that's why it's exploited. But for 3 years now, my mission of bringing this shit into the light, that's why on the third anniversary of my queendom come and my 30th fucking birthday, I am going to fill in some holes in my story. If you listen to the first episode of this season, I talked a little bit about how I got here and about how the podcast led to me becoming a dom. And everything I said is true. I just left out some important parts. My therapist tells me I'm not lying. I'm just withholding information, and there is a difference. And I could choose to not withhold that at whatever time. And now is that time, because I think it's important. It's important for me to feel like I'm not hiding something that I'm actually really fucking proud of, but also something that's real and important, and in hopes of further normalizing these conversations and this reality that exists, and making it not only sex work, but sex work and sex and life happier and healthier and safer and kinkier for us all. So on that note, let's roll the clock back. Roll the clock back to season one of Like Queendom Come 3 years ago. I went into it with blind faith, like I said, and I started talking about just, honestly, sex and life and spirituality and dating and partying. And I was just figuring it out and having really raw conversations. And I quickly began experiencing an overwhelming amount of like response in the form of stories and questions and like deep stories. And I realized that like putting myself and putting my vulnerable moments out there, just it made people feel like they knew me and they could talk to me. And I loved it. I spent literally hours, so many hours, like responding to DMs. And then even at the time I started my OnlyFans, and that was my, I guess, first introduction to the online sex work world. At the time I was making these like super artsy, dancey videos where I was like stripping. They were very erotic. But even still there, I realized these guys that were subscribing, they wanted to talk, like they wanted to connect. And I mean, I spent hours writing to people on Instagram, and I just honestly, I became overwhelmed eventually. And I still feel like I have an issue because I still barely check my messages on Instagram now. It takes me months to respond to messages now because I think I was a bit like traumatized. And I remember people in my life at the time being like, how are you going to make money from this? Like, I did not have a lot of money. I had like, I was living on a bit of savings at that point. I genuinely had no fucking clue where I was going. Like, I literally look at myself now, like when I look at myself at 27 doing this, I feel like I'm looking at myself now the way that everyone else must have been looking at me then. Like, where is this going? What the fuck is going to happen or come of this? Like, good fucking question. And people around me are like, you're spending hours responding to these messages. Like, how do you make it a fucking thing? In the midst of this time, I was going to sex parties and BDSM events, and I was modeling things, like I was fucking in it. And eventually I got invited to K-Town. Now, K-Town, it's Koreatown in LA. And I used to live in South Korea. I lived there for a year. I taught. And they have norebangs, which is like, they're like karaoke rooms where you go with your friends and you rent out a room and you get drinks and sing karaoke and such. And so I was invited to be a sort of like atmosphere model, quote unquote, in K-Town. And I knew just because I was like, you know, in the world, I knew that atmosphere model like had quotations around it. But at this point, I'm fucking down for anything. Like, I was, this seems a little dodgy. This seems like it could be fun. Let's further my understanding, further my personal research. And so I want you to picture, I show up for my first night in K-Town. I am picked up at a Walgreens by a black van, and there is a driver, and there's like a dozen girls in the van, and we're hauled through fucking K-Town, and we get dropped off at a karaoke bar. And what's funny about these karaoke bars, they'll be like family karaoke, and I can guarantee you no motherfucking family is going to any of these karaoke joints. And my first night in K-Town was fucking interesting. And, you know, the spirit led me through this entire experience that I'm about to share with you guys. But the first night, I'm dressed up and I'm in this van. And I remember being on the way being like, I don't know what the fuck I'm walking into. Whatever it is, like, I'm here for the journey. I'm fucking here for it. We get to this K-Town bar, we're let in, you know, with security, it's very secure, and I walk into a karaoke room with a group of like a dozen girls, and we walk in like fucking cattle, to be honest. And now is when the people in the room essentially pick who is going to be their companion for the evening. And the first room I walked into, I was selected, and I ended up having this super fun night with this businessman. We drank tequila and we talked and we sang, and time was up. He paid several hundred dollars, and I texted my black van, left, gave the black van a sort of cut, small percentage, and that was that. Nothing sexual happened. I think I did make out with him, but honestly, like, he was kind of a cute dude. I remember leaving being like, holy shit, fuck. Like, did I just party and have a great time and have so much fun and then get fucking paid cash for it? Like, this is fucking amazing. And I was also like, holy shit, like, this guy just paid to, like, talk with me. Like, we spent hours just chatting. I mean, what? So I kept going back to K-Town, and I swear to God, the first night I was there has to have been this, like, spiritual universal thing, because as amazing as it was and as good as I felt afterwards, it was not really representative of what K-Town is or the things I experienced there as a whole. When I got, like, hired, quote-unquote, when I got hired, I received a picture of, like, a white folded up piece of paper that said, no sex, no drugs, no going home with clients, which I quickly, very quickly learned all of those things are happening and almost even expected, if I dare say. And these karaoke rooms are blacked out boxes where Mondays is the busiest fucking night because everyone flies in for business. And so it's these powerful people with money. They're exclusive. Not just anyone can show up. And you have access to unlimited alcohol and drugs and women. There's fucking so many minivans of women just coming into the room and basically take your pick, right? And it was fascinating for me to see, who are you when there is nothing to hold you accountable? And when you have all of these things at your disposal and you have, like, all of these things that represent power and wealth and sex, how do you act? How do you engage when you do have that power? Speaking about, you know, the men in the rooms. And I had beautiful connections and conversations, and I learned about the value of connection when I was in K-Town. I was like, fuck, like, these guys will just pay money, like, hundreds of dollars for a couple of hours of us just talking and just connecting. It's fucking valuable, and people pay a lot for it. And so, A, it's like, until we can address the lack of communication and connection in our society, this kind of work is always going to be valuable because people need it. But also, there was some really dark sides of that, as I'm sure you can totally imagine. And there are so many things that can go wrong. And for me, it was like, truly, it was like playing Russian roulette with this very real side of me that existed anyways. I mean, truthfully, I mean, this is a time that I was really exploring a lot and partying a lot and in a lot of different groups and being invited to a lot of different things and having sex with a lot of different people. And I always had, and that's why I was like, I'm a serial fucking cheater. Like, I have ended up in some places that I cringed thinking about because I'm like, fuck, like, I was not thinking. Like, why do I do that? Like, why did I do that? this felt like addressing that like so head on, because I never knew what I was going to get when I walked through a door. Was I going to get a really nice, kind, respectful businessman who wanted to chat and was fun? Or was I going to get somebody who was really aggressive and constantly pushed my boundaries and who made me feel weird, who made me like have to practice boundaries in a way that I never really had before? Like, I had to say no in situations. I had to stick up for myself, and I also had to follow my fucking gut, and I had to follow my intuition. And honestly, I have never in my life experienced the power of my own energy more than in K-Town, because I saw where nights that I would go to K-Town and I felt great. I felt hot. I felt magnetic. I felt excited. All of those things. I would attract just the best types of people. I would have the best nights. I would have so much fun. And then the nights that I went and I felt shit, I just didn't feel really good. I committed to go, or felt like I needed to go, or whatever. Like, those were the nights that just weird shit happened. And I feel like I was engaged with darker parts of humanity. And it got to a point where I just started listening to my body and listening to that intuition. And so if I felt like shit, I didn't fucking go. And then when I felt great, I did. And when I like allowed my body and who I was and my energy to just trust that, it became really like successful, and I had a lot of fun. But like I said, I had a lot of mishaps as well. Now let me reiterate the boundaries of what happens, how much it cost. All of that is left up to us. It was left up to me. However, it was common for things to happen. And I personally saw early on how easy it is to, I'm getting paid for my time and to party and to flirt. And there's a vibe. I mean, why would I not get paid more to hook up a little bit? Why would I not? I mean, this is fun. And the cash is intoxicating, truly. And I asked myself in a lot of the rooms that I was in, and I grinded up on dudes that I wasn't into, but it was fun. But I also, again, boundaries. Like, I realized if I didn't tell this guy to pay me, you know, $100 for me to fucking dance on him, he wouldn't. He would just pay my normal rate. Like, he was going to pay what I told him to. They would pay for what I say. Like, they pay for the value that I tell them to. And if I don't tell them to, then they don't. That was empowering. I was like, oh shit. And then I also was empowered to say no, or to fucking slap a price on things, which honestly, that makes it hotter sometimes. But ultimately for me, the majority of the time in K-Town, I would ask myself, like, how much would it cost me to fuck this dude? Like, how much would it take for me to fuck this dude? And personally, a lot of the times I was like, it's out of the ballpark. It's out of the ballpark. I would never be able to bring myself there. Then one night I walked into a room and I met who I am going to call Special Agent. And the reason I'm calling him Special Agent is because throughout this story, deadass, I was like, are you the FBI? I thought I might have been caught up in a sting or something, but I was there for it. whatever comes, whatever may. I met a Special Agent and a friend of his in one of the rooms, and man, like, we connected. He was fucking cool. He was traveling for business. He was in his 40s, and we just had a fucking grand old time. And his colleague, whoever brought him there for business, pulled me aside and asked if I would be interested in meeting them tomorrow night, and that he would pay me a certain amount, which was a lot, to entertain. And he said that I was free to do whatever I wanted, whatever I did not want. You know, he had me as well. I could feel safe to do whatever I wanted to or didn't want to. Obviously, like, candidly speaking, like, there was way more money on the table if we fucked, right? That was obvious. And after this interaction, I left and I fucking thought about it. I was like thinking, and I was like, fuck, I would fuck him for free. I would fuck that dude for free. We may have not met in any other setting, but had we just had that type of connection and that type of conversation, I fucking would. And I knew that he travels a lot for business, and he has a daughter, and he's a single guy, and he does not have time to invest in a relationship in a way that would be beneficial for anyone. He can't maintain that, and he's conscious of that. However, he still craves connection. Like, he still craves sex. He still craves conversation. And just because he doesn't want all of the strings and all of the responsibilities that come with a conscious and healthy relationship doesn't mean he shouldn't have access to valuable connection. And I kind of realized that. I was like, damn, why not? So I met him and the friend, both of them, and there was another gal there, and we had a fucking great time. We had drinks in a hotel room, and we danced, and we laughed, and we told fucking stories, and we fucking jumped on the bed in lingerie. It was so fucking fun. And we ended up eventually, I actually had a conversation with Secret Agent, which, by the way, on the way there, I was like, if this is some type of fucking sting and I'm going to prison, I'm gonna have a fucking lot of time to write my book. Like, I don't know. But I actually told him in private, I was like, this is my first time doing this, like, exchanging sex for money. So, and he was just so kind and respectful. He was like, we don't have to do anything you don't want to do. And I'm glad you're here. Like, you're a cool fucking person to talk to. And honestly, just having that conversation, like, him and I on our own, when we went back with the other two, I was so fucking turned on and I was so excited. And the other couple was like hooking up in the chair, and Secret Agent and I are like hooking up off the bed and on the fucking love seat thing. And it was just this fucking hot, sexy, steamy experience, and it was fucking fun. And then the other couple left, and Secret Agent asked if I wanted to stay, and I was like, fuck it, sure. I stayed. I had been paid before. I was paid before that, a fucking very, very fair amount. And I stayed the night, woke up in the morning, we got coffee together, and he left. He went to the airport for, you know, to be on his adventures. And I sat in my car, and I just sat for a minute, and I was like, holy fuck. I have been lied to, because here I sit, having been told or having heard my whole life, you know, you never want to have to end up on the street selling your body. Last resort, you can sell your body, which, A, the only thing worse than selling it is giving it away for fucking free. But also, B, here I am sitting in my car with my body still fully intact, like, with me here, and more so on my person is a fucking fat stack of cash. Even more so. I'm like, I just had this amazing night, this super fun fucking night. I had great sex, and I got fucking paid for it. And now he is going along his way. I'm going along mine. There's no weird questions of like, what's this going to be? When, you know, are you going to call me? Or what's this going to turn into or not turn into? And if it doesn't turn into anything, is it going to be weird? Is the amazing night going to get overshadowed by just fucking bullshit? No. We had an amazing night. That's it. The transaction was up front. Like, I show up and provide value. I receive an amount of money for this value. And then we go along our merry ways. And I'm thinking about, holy fuck, like, all relationships are transactional. All of them. And I think people want to say, I've even said, like, we don't want relationships to be transactional. But that's fucking stupid. Like, they are transactional. Like, it's value for value. By definition, that is a transaction. And relationships feel out of balance and feel fucked up when one person is giving, 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 and there's no transaction taking place. There's no exchange of value in return. All relationships are transactional. However, in our society, it is much more common to not actually discuss the transaction, to get it on the fucking back end. How many times have we all heard in conversations between women, oh, he has so much money, like, he's fucking loaded? How many times have we heard conversations between men of, she's got a fat ass, she cooks amazing, whatever. Like, this is happening. Relationships are transactional, and even more sense than obviously the physical shit, like money and cooking abilities. Fucking hopefully you are exchanging energy, you're exchanging protection and nurturing to one another, like back and forth. And sex work and what I had just experienced felt like a very honest transaction. And it felt like I received value, he received value. And let's be fucking honest, I have fucked frogs for free. I have fucked so many frogs for free. I'm like, whoa, this feels fantastic. Like, this is great. So that's the first thing I felt. I felt fucking lied to. And I felt empowered, honestly. But the other thing I immediately felt was that this experience was not at all representative of a vast majority of experiences in this industry. However, it fucking could be. It can be. I entered this world from a very empowered space of wanting to be there. And which is different than, I think, what so many people associate sex work with, which is exploitation, which we'll get to more of in a sec. But I entered into it wanting to and making my own choices. And part of that, honestly, was the crazy part, because, you know, 3 years ago when it was presented to me to start an OnlyFans, I remember thinking, oh gosh, what? Like, people knowing I have an OnlyFans, like, risque pictures? I could never. And then you post artsy stripping videos, and then you talk to a guy and end up sending a video fingering yourself, and then you end up sending a fucking video, and then, I mean, one thing leads to another in this case as much as any other, and boundaries expand. And honestly, something I think I've said here before, but something that I have said since the very first thing that I posted on OnlyFans 3 years ago, I remember saying to myself, if this were blasted in Times Square with everyone that I know and don't know looking at it, would I be okay? And I've asked myself that through and through and through, and there would definitely be some things that make me uncomfy. However, at the end of the day, I have stayed true to that throughout. I've done things because I thought they were hot, they were fun, or I needed the fucking money. Nothing's wrong with that either. And the fact that I got to feel hot, this shit that I wanted to do anyways, that I wanted to flirt and I wanted to have these connections and I also wanted to get paid, and now voila, I'm doing it all. And this whole process was a practice of practicing my boundaries and also literally placing a number on what I'm worth, right? And so many people are like, oh, you put a price tag on yourself. It's like, my body is still here, you stupid fuckers. Like, as laborers, as workers, we slave away for the fucking man. People work for decades and decades of their lives and then are not able to go on the vacations that they were saving to retirement. They can't even fucking enjoy those vacations because they've got like arthritis and back pain and shit. Like, people slave away for the man every fucking day and sell their bodies in a fucking real, actual way, and then cannot pay their fucking rent. To me, it just made sense. And throughout it, I didn't even understand like some of the responses I got from people, because there's just so much like shit in all of our heads. And somehow it would just be better if I told you I just sell feet pics, because selling a pic of my fucking pussy is too much when the same thing is happening with those feet pics. Like, it's no fucking different, and it shouldn't be, and why shouldn't it be, and why shouldn't I fucking make a normal, like, 3 hours worth of fucking minimum wage off of a fucking foot picture or of a picture of my tits? Like, why the fuck would I not? But what I began to realize in this process, obviously, is that boundaries expand, and they have to be done consciously. Fuck, they have to be done consciously, because the money is, it can be intoxicating. And for me, the adrenaline of it all was intoxicating. I met a couple more guys in K-Town, and then I went online and I met some guys there, and I had some pretty gnarly experiments with myself, with clients, ranging from the way I quoted them or didn't quote them, just allowed them to pay kind of whatever, went through the process of dealing with that, saying more, realizing that people will, in this setting where the transaction is meant to be upfront, it is what it is. However, people will still take, even well-meaning people, like, will still take shit if they're given. Like, you realize that you didn't pay for the fucking candy bar at the fucking grocery store when they were checking you out. Like, how many of you actually go back? You're like, oh, this is a gift from the universe. Like, but here I am feeling like, hey, I am putting a number on myself. Like, how do I do that? And does it vary? Especially, you know, if I'm talking to someone and they make several million dollars a year, my value of my time in that perspective, honestly, in my eyes, costs a lot more than someone who makes a couple hundred thousand dollars a year. I was able to start actually putting a number on my fucking time and my energy and my body. Even saying that sounds so taboo and so fucked up, but it's fucking true. Like, I literally met guys all over the world and would have sex with them and would hear about how beautiful it was. And I heard that I was a sexual healer at times, literally. And I don't know. I just have a fucking gift. And to be able to experience value back from that, and then to be able to be fucking paid and say yes to what I wanted and no to what I didn't want. So the fact that I was able to make choices for myself or not, right? Like, the fact that I had to stand up for myself or not was a really wild place to be in, to be putting a number of value on my interactions. Like, asking for money is fucking hard enough for me. especially for something that a lot of times like came so naturally. I'm like, this person's fucking paying me for this interaction. Like, holy shit. But also to say yes, to say no, and to say no even when the money is good. And that is a crazy place to be in. Like, you've already come this far. Why can't you go a little further? And for me, not only was it like a game, like I felt like I was in some type of fucking movie at times. I was like, what the fuck, when I'm on docks going to boats and shit. And I look back now and I'm like, what? Like, I had no screening process back then. Like, what in the fuck, man? Like, but I followed my fucking intuition. And truly, this might sound crazy to some of you, but what I experienced in K-Town, in the sense of I could pinpoint, I knew when I felt an electric magnetic energy, which now I think probably it was during my feral follicular phase of my cycle. Honestly, if I went back and looked, it probably lines up to like when I was ovulating. Like, when I would go and feel magnetic and hot and excited to be there, and I would have the most incredible interactions. And then when I felt like shit and just like drug myself there, that was when shit got fucking weird. But also, I could feel the energy in the rooms. I could feel where things were going from the moment I stepped in. And learning that and becoming so crazy aware of that and in constant communication with that part of myself was such an important tool when I started exploring full service and escorting, meeting people from online. And I think that my intuition saved my ass a couple times because I was fucking stupid, honestly. I didn't have a screening process. Like, and sometimes I feel like I was just trying to be some like Nancy Drew of the fucking sex work world, honestly. But also, one of the things that I always felt confident about, and one of the reasons I always felt safe throughout this entire experience, is that I didn't hide what I was doing. My mom knew where I was and what I was doing. My close family and friends knew. And at the time, I was not sharing many of the details per se with honestly anyone, except for I was being very open with my mom and maybe a handful of girlfriends. But also, my mom bought me this tracker necklace that had an alert alarm system that notified authorities and also several of my emergency contact list. And we actually just had an interview, my mom and I, Queen Mother, had an interview with a journalist this last week talking about this exactly, her support of me throughout this entire process. And even when I told her, the journalist had asked, and I told her that, she was like, well, support is a hard word. And I was like, okay. She supported me, like, as a whole human being who she knew was I was going to do whatever the fuck I wanted to do anyways. And from a young age, she has always instilled in me that she would rather know what the fuck is going on and be able to know and understand me and also be there to help if needed. She has always been that person. She started forming that relationship long before I, you know, just went up to her one day and said, I'm a sex worker now. I was safe to tell her. And even though she was not super gung-ho and was terrified in the way that a lot of people are, again, because people have this idea that it's all just trash and exploitation and shitty fucking people and shitty fucking men involved. And can't go another second without saying this. I'm like, yeah, when you keep things in the dark, when you keep things in the dark and when you don't talk about them and when you constantly ignore and deny their existence and push them into the shadows, that's when they get fucking exploited. That's when they are exploited and taken advantage of. And so, of course, there is that in this industry. And of course, my mom would be terrified. However, she trusted me and wanted to still support me and know me. And so I told her where I was. she had my location. And I never made it a secret that people knew where I was. People knew what I do. They know where I'm going right now. And honest to God, that not only energetically gave me a sense of protection, but I fucking swear to you, it actually protected me. Because so many, what I realized, what I learned quickly is that so many of my peers, so many fellow sex workers, they don't have anybody who knows where the fuck they are, what they're doing. What they're doing is not inherently dangerous. It's dangerous because it's done in the shadows, and so many of them know on that they can tell what they're doing. And when one thing inevitably leads to another, it leads to another, who's there to know where the fuck they are, or where they're going, or what they're doing? Or and to add on top of that, honestly, a lot of this shit blew up during COVID. And that's when a lot of people fucking moved to LA. And a lot of girls are online. They're from fucking Minnesota, and they're online posting these hot photos and this lavish lifestyle. And they're telling family back home that they have modeling gigs, and they get addicted to the cash and the lifestyle. And nobody in their family in middle America knows that they're spending from 10 p.m. to 7 a.m. in fucking K-Town, meeting God knows who, going God knows where. And the reason they don't tell them is because it's not fucking accepted. It's not accepted. Companionship, sex work, all of it. I had beautiful moments in fucking K-Town, and I had some shitty ones. And it's shitty to think that in those shitty ones, I'm not actually protected. Like, I would be criminalized. I should be ashamed of where I am and what I'm doing. And at the end of the day, like, if people truly do want sex workers to be protected, would you not advocate for it to be safer for them? And also, as honestly, as a parent or as a friend, like, if somebody you know is doing this, would you not, like, are you so uncomfortable? Can you not put your discomfort aside, or whatever the fuck you think aside, to actually care for the human and listen to the human who's sitting in front of you? And at the end of the day, wouldn't you want them to be safe? Because everyone knows that sex workers are targeted people. They're targeted because there's an idea that no one is looking for them. And that's not true. And honestly, just the fact that I made it clear that people were, I think, protected me in that space. And being able to exist in that space, what I felt like, somewhat safely. And now I heavily advocate and scream from the hills about screening my clients and reviewing who it is that I do live sessions with. Even though my sessions today look very, very different than they did back then. During that time when I was escorting, or I didn't know, maybe like sugar babying, that's kind of, you know, like a term that people use. You get an allowance from the dude, daddy, whatever. You can negotiate what that means. And what I was experiencing during that time, I was just me. Like, I was just fucking me. I was still dominant. I still kind of fucked with them. I still kind of called the shots. I just kind of came into myself, and my clients loved it. And there were some that I just talked and went to dinner with, and there are some that I fucked. But during that time, I kind of was realizing, like, my space, my place in all of this, and also my energy. I was like, I am not the, like, yes, daddy type of girl. I'm just not. Like, I'm not the take baby shopping for the glorious shit and, like, whatever you want to do, daddy. Like, that's just not me in that space. Like, when I go out to bars, and when I have fucked around with men in the past, and when I've dated, like, that fun the fun part of me that gets excited, like sexually and like that turned onness, that is very much a dominant masculine side of me. And I realized that's the side that I wanted to engage with in that space. And it helped me define who I wanted to be, how I wanted to be. And it was right around that time that OG Subby made his way into the picture. So I think in the first episode of this season, I kind of led on like OG Subby had just heard the podcast and then was like, oh, this would be cool. When in actuality, like OG Subby found me online, did listen to the podcast, and then he did invite me in to the Dom session. And from there, I just fucking took it and ran. And from there, I began learning and practicing as a dominatrix, and eventually was lucky enough to be able to harness my powers and translate them online, which ultimately, here we are. The rest is history. I get to choose who I work with in person now, and I have a very thorough screening process. And I get to provide this value to a large audience that wouldn't otherwise be able to access it. And I do believe it's valuable. I know it is. But the thing is, I sit here as a dominatrix today that has my boundaries that in some eyes are more acceptable than the boundaries or lack thereof that I had years ago. But ultimately, being a dominatrix, sure, I have sessions and there's technical things that I've learned. But also for me, becoming a dom was becoming a dominant woman, doing what the fuck I wanted to do, when I wanted to do it, how I wanted to do it. To me, that was it. It is the essence of dominance. It's the essence of empowerment. At this point, I choose who I work with, when I work, how I work, where I work. And while there is a huge crowd of people in the United States and elsewhere who would say that all sex work is coercive, it is all from a completely exploitative and nasty and disempowered place, I would ask them, like, what about this is not empowering? It's my choice. And I hate trafficking as much as Christians in the Bible Belt, as anybody. I hate trafficking as much as anybody. Nobody hates trafficking more than people who are consensually in the sex work industry. But continuing to put it in the shadows and continuing to try to outlaw something that has existed for fucking ever and will always continue to, continuing to just try to deny it does not make it safer. It just makes it easier for bad actors to act. People preach that they don't want us to be exploited, but they create policies and legislation that makes it easier to exploit us. When we have to hide and when we don't have rights, when we are going to be criminalized, that's not protecting us. So then what actually is it? If it's for your own moral judgments of what is right or wrong, like, that's great, but like, respectfully, keep them away from me. Like, is that really more important than keeping people safe? And also, I'm wearing a shirt right now from an organization, Decriminalize Sex Work, and I got it at the shirt at AVN, and it just says, sex workers, making people happy for a millennia. It is fucking true. It is true. I have watched grown men cry. I have experienced come to Jesus moments, like truly deeper and more authentic and genuine ever than what I experienced in the church, because there was no judgment. Like, we're already in the space, what's to fucking judge? I've experienced people truly unfolding in ways that impact them, that make them happier, that make them less angry, that make them more accepting, that make them project less of their shit on others. You know, I used to say, especially in the first season of the podcast, I'm like, it's not that I love sex so much. I mean, I do love sex, but I think what I'm addicted to is that like in-between. That in-between from meeting someone and that and having sex, when you know you're going to have sex or you know that it's going to that space, the conversation goes in ways that it just never would if sex or intimacy in that way is off the table. Do you know what I'm saying? Like that in between is so fun, that push and pull, that getting to know each other and that game. And also when you're intimate, that vulnerability, like the rough and real desire and the moments after. I mean, it's the most beautiful glance, the most rawest form of humanity that I've experienced. And being able to experience that and being able to actually say, you know what, this is not evil. This is not evil. This is not bad. I feel like this is so important to talk about right now, especially because with this election year and very large movements aggressively trying to police our bodies and attack freedom of expression and speech and sexuality and sex work, honestly, why would we not want to create a structure and a way for people to receive pleasure and to learn about pleasure and to explore, be coached in pleasure in a safe way? And don't even fucking get me started on the fact that there is a loneliness epidemic and there are disabled people and there are people who are just traveling and people who know they shouldn't be in a relationship. There are a million reasons why someone would want to ethically hire a sex worker. Why would we criminalize that? And why would we, on the sex worker side, why would we make it more difficult? Why would we make it harder for them to be safe? And honestly, if we could stop shaming and shitting on an industry that everyone is obsessed with, everyone is obsessed with sex. Everyone consumes porn in one way or another. Even in fucking HBO TV shows, we fucking love it. It's all around us. Like, why would we not embrace it in a way that could be healthy, that could allow the good actors to act? And I know this because of my fucking thousands of hours of experience, professional and not. Like, people are obsessed with sex and being good at it or being inadequate or wanting weird things or making weird sounds or whatever the fuck. It is a part of all of us to some varying degrees, yet it's the one thing that we like is shameful and that we don't seek out any type of guidance. Who the fuck is better to learn from than sex workers, than people in the industry? Imagine if sex workers felt that they were not shamed to speak out about their experiences and what they know sexually. Yeah, like, sex workers are the most sexually diverse people that you will meet, but also they're just the most diverse people you will meet because they meet and talk and listen. Listening is a skill that's required, like, and learning. They learn from so many different types of people and different types of clients, and they learn about humans, and they learn about adapting to different situations and scenarios and personalities and energies. And just imagine what the world of sex and sexuality and the way we think of it and the way we approach it, what it would be if the people who know it best weren't so fucking shamed and secluded and worried about their actual livelihood, because at any moment my fucking bank could be shut down simply because I get direct deposits from adult sites. Like, that is fucking stressful. We can't think five steps ahead as an industry because we're dealing with all the things that are constantly coming up from every fucking angle. And ultimately, that's why That's why I'm here. That's why I'm still here. That's why I decided to come back on the mic and share my stories and share this story. But honestly, it's hard. It's hard and it's fucking scary. And the girl that graduated college and fucked off to Southeast Asia and said, I don't want to be a part of any of this shit, that girl is still inside of me and I still feel her often. However, I'm often reminded of the moment when I was living voluntarily in a tent in the Philippines for less than a dollar a day. And that's what I wanted. Like, I was like, well, kind of. I really wanted to find like a true, like naked tree community. And I didn't. But I was still, you know, living this hippie land, anti-capitalist lifestyle, kind of. And I had, my hair was in dreads, bed bugs and lice and pneumonia and bacterial infection. And I'm just like on the beach and realizing that like, fuck, like I can't fuck off. Like I can't just fuck off the world. I have not earned my right to just fuck off the world. Like I need to provide some type of value in order to feel value. And I can't provide value when my hair is being eaten alive by bugs because I'm not like willing to do anything in the system to take care of myself in a sense. And the same is true now. The same is true now. However, you know, these days I see these like hippie communities who are living somewhere in Guatemala and taking turns cooking and they're all gardening and they're living this beautiful co-ed life. And some days I'm like, fuck, that is so attractive and I could do it. I could totally do it. But I realized that me being in that circle chanting like songs of love and peace, and everyone in my immediate sight feels that and sees that, like it doesn't change the fact that right outside of those gates is a world crumbling and on fire due to the very system that I am privileged enough to be able to escape, which is like a fraction of the fucking world that I even can just escape and go fucking live the life I want and disassociate and like whatever the fuck. But I also feel like having that ability and having that power, and I feel like it must mean that I also have the power to actually do something in the fucking system. And no conventional way was gonna work, obviously. Like I tried pre-law and I tried all the things until I fucked off. But like as I sit here now and reflect on the 3 years and what I'm doing and where I'm going and how fucking crazy it all is, I'm like, fuck, I'm actually doing something of value. And I see it. I'm experiencing it. I have beautiful conversations and interactions and people meet themselves in front of me and I learn about myself. And there is a circular motion of value going on. And ultimately, I sit here now 3 years later doing what I do, and what keeps me going is seeing the impact, knowing the impact, feeling the impact, and the deep knowing that I get to engage with one of the deepest parts of humanity. And it's where healing takes place, and pleasure is so important in healing. And this is a fucked up world, and sometimes pleasure is fucking hard, and sometimes people don't know how to receive it. And this world of sex work and sex is not inherently dangerous. It's not inherently nasty. It's quite the opposite. All of the things that we have around them are just fucking constructs. And honestly, making it more difficult for sex, sex work, desire, pleasure to be accessed safely and consensually. And none of that is making the world a better place. So thank you for taking this journey with me. Here is to 3 years. Here's to my fucking 30s. Here is to keeping an open mind and keeping it fucking kinky. Cheers, guys.
What you waiting for? She's got what you need while you over there at the door. Nightmares and dreams, you just need belief. The queen has all that you should need. Just say the queen will come, that will be done. Come right in, close the door. Just wait for what she's got in store. Come right in, close the door. Just wait for what she's got in store.
Dreams can come from nightmares too. The queendom will take over you. Dreams can come from nightmares too. The queendom will take over you.
Go and get them, love.
Thy Queendom Come is a production of TQC LLC, music by Guillermo Jamot Jr. and LDK. All stories and audio used with permission. Names and details have been changed to protect the sluts involved. And let it be known, I do not encourage any of this. Wait, that's not true. Hold on.